good morning to you. Word of information for what it's worth. We're going to be gone for a couple of weeks, but we're going to have visiting speakers for 4 weeks. So that'll give us a little bit of a break when we get back. We are going to be going to several places, including Israel, and we do covet your prayers for safety on that trip.
Can we say we're in the Holy Land this time?
We really are. We've said that about Texas for two decades, and this time we really are. There will be visiting speakers. You all know Lloyd Atkinson. Lloyd will be speaking next Sunday and then 3 Sundays from now. Tom is going to be speaking 2 Sundays from now, and then on the last Sunday in May, I think that's the 29th, if you look in the upper right-hand corner of that open section, you'll see the Burroughs, Olin and Lynn Burroughs. They're going to be in country and are going to be here to give us a report. For those of you who don't know them, they have been part of our class for a year while they were on stateside assignment. They have retired as missionaries, serving primarily in Africa, but have stayed on the mission field. They bought a house 2 miles from where they used to live and are now continuing to do all the things they've been doing for the last decade or so, but they're doing it on their own retirement funds and a little bit of help from friends. And a few of us have joined in trying to help them do that over and above the other things we do here. Okay? So that, I think, tells you what you need to know, maybe not what you want to know. So if you'll take a look at Genesis chapter 29, this is where I think we left off. And my goal today is to try to lay out for you something of the material that falls between Genesis 28, the section that starts at verse 10 and goes through the end of the chapter, where where Jacob meets God on his way out of town, so to speak. He's running from his brother, running from the things that he has done, headed off to his mother's family's place, but doesn't know what he's going to find when he gets there, and he has an encounter with God. That's what we ended with the last time we talked about Genesis. Chapter 29 starts some more of that story, and when you come to chapter 32, around verse 22-23, somewhere in there, Jacob has another encounter with God. It's not the only one, but this is the second big one that happens here. And so what we're trying to do is look at that interim experience. This interim period of time lasts for a little while. So let's see who's reading ahead, as you're supposed to. Each time we come, you're supposed to have read several chapters ahead. So those of you who have read chapters 29 and 30 and 31, how long does this period last?
20 years.
20 years. Mm-hmm. 20 years. And so that's what we're going to try to cover. That's for us, that'd be pretty good. We're running not quite a chapter a week. And so if we can do 2 chapters or 3 in one Sunday, that would be pretty amazing. Okay. Now, the story is long and detailed, and I invite you to read through it closely as you have time, if you've not done that already. Chapter 29, Jacob arrives in the country where his mother's family is. In my translation, it is called the land of the Easterners. How does yours translate that at the end of verse 2? The people of the East. Yours says the land of the Eastern people. Somebody said?
The land of the sons of the East.
The land of the sons of the East. So, let me get my bearings. Over there would be that picture. And it's interesting that it's worded that way. There out in the open, he saw a well with 3 flocks of sheep lying beside it. This well was used for watering the flocks. The stone on the mouth of the well was a large one, and only when all the flocks had collected there did they roll the stone off the mouth of the well and water the sheep. Then they would replace the stone on the mouth of the well. Now, this morning in church, there was an interesting experience. If you've not been to worship yet, you have not had this experience yet. I've already had three of you come to me and say, if the pastor can cover the whole of the Old Testament in 27 minutes, why are we taking so long? And that's what you will experience. It is a sweeping look at the story of the Old Testament, and I think it will be of interest to you. Those of you who are in business or in other kinds of places where organizations organize and managers manage and people are managed, they have meetings, and every once in a while people talk about the view from 30,000 feet. Have you heard that phrase used? That's what you're getting in the sermon this morning, is the view from 30,000 feet. Whole sections of Scripture get six words. Off you go on to something else. Okay? It's powerful because until you see how everything fits together, the details don't necessarily come alive. But we're looking at the details. What's the detail you see today? How many flocks of sheep?
Three.
How does he know that? They're probably grouped in some way. Okay? And they're there to do what? What's their purpose? They're going to water the sheep. But why aren't they watering the sheep? They're waiting for everybody to get there. Okay? Have you had family meals? Where Brother Fred or Sister Emmeline was late. I have this recollection of being in a house in Los Angeles overlooking the Los Angeles Basin. And the fellow who was the host of that particular meal was called away to the phone, and we're sitting there with his children. It was him, his children, and us, and our family. And 5 minutes went by, 10 minutes went by, 15 minutes went by, and I looked at his children, who were teenagers at the time, and said, should we just go on and finish this course? Because we were having a meal with courses. And the young man, the boy, the younger child, the young man said, let me go see. He goes away. He comes back and he says, we will wait. It was an interesting moment. It's one of those moments that I cherish. They're waiting. What are they waiting on? Apparently they're waiting on another flock, or two or three. Okay. Jacob said to the shepherds, friends, where are you from? They said, we're from Haran. He then asked them, do you know Laban, the son of Nahor? They replied,
Yes, we do.
He asked them, is he well? He is, they replied, and?
Here comes his daughter.
Rachel, with the flock. Then he said, but it's still broad daylight. Not the time to round up the animals. Why don't you water the sheep and take them back to graze? To which they replied,
We can't.
Now, buried in there is a difference of customs. Jacob is not at home anymore. He's in a new place. In his place, when do they water the sheep?
In the evening.
Here, when do they water the sheep? Middle of the day. What does Jacob think of this? He thinks they're nuts. Why are you doing it that way? Why don't you do it this way? Are any of the rest of you afflicted with this problem? They tell the story during the French Revolution of a Frenchman who had been, a nobleman who had been captured by the people and was ready to be guillotined. And they put him on the guillotine, pulled the rope, and nothing happened. The blade did not drop. And the fellow just before had expressed his contempt of the crowd that was getting ready to execute him. And he said, I am not afraid. I will face the blade. Lay me down face up. So they put him down face up and they pulled the thing and nothing happened. And all the people said, it's a miracle. And they let him go. Brought a second guy out, laid him out. He said, I too am brave. I will face the blade. And he faces the blade. They pull the thing. Nothing happened. They bring a third one out. This is a nobleman who's an engineer. He says, I'm brave. I will face the blade. They lay him down face up. Just before they pull the rope, he says, you know, I think I see what's wrong. How do people react to you if you are afflicted with this problem? How do people react with you when you have, well, I refer to them as suggestions. I say, have you thought about this or that? After a while, it gets to be a joke. Jacob is, why don't you do this? We can't. What's his next thought going to be? Luckily, I don't think he expresses it. Why not? He was still talking to them when Rachel arrived with her father's flock, for she was a shepherdess. As soon as Jacob saw Rachel, his uncle Laban's daughter, with his uncle Laban's flock, he went up, rolling the stone off the mouth of the well, and watered his uncle Laban's sheep. I want to point out to you something. What did he notice? Did you pick that up in this little verse? This is what to watch for. Watch for the details. As long as you're not at 30,000 feet, watch for the details. What did he notice?
Rachel.
He noticed Rachel first. What did he notice next? He noticed the flock.
Rich.
Uh-huh. He left home. What did he take with him? Starts with A. Almost nothing. Maybe enough food for a day or two. He has been living in, for that period in that time, the lap of luxury. He is now completely on his own. His hope for support is his Uncle Laban. He notices Rachel. Okay? But he also notices the evidence as well. And what does he do? No. First, what did he do?
He rolled the stone.
Roll the stone off the mouth of the well. I've only gotten to chapter 10. Don't go to verse 10. Don't go to verse 11 yet.
By himself.
Water the. Does anybody remember something that this might be a reflection of? When Abraham sent his servant to find a wife for Isaac, remember the servant's prayer? Let it be a woman who is from the right family and who volunteers to do what? Water the camels. How much effort would that take? Lots. What's Jacob just done? A lot of effort. Okay. Now, once he has done that, he apparently feels he's now earned the right to take another step of greater interaction. And what does he do? And mine says he kissed Rachel and burst into tears. Are you enjoying this?
Must have been pretty bad.
Mine says he kissed Rachel and lifted his voice and wept.
He wept aloud. That's what that meant. Okay. What are you learning about Jacob? He's either a good actor or he's very emotional. Which one you want? I think emotional. What do we know about Esau? What do you know about Jacob? I doubt that's fair, but it's kind of where it is. Okay? Now, I want to pause for just a second. Your mental image over the last 3 minutes, what does Jacob look like?
A man. He rolled the stone away.
Mm-hmm.
Skin.
What does he
skin
look like?
And bones.
How? What age is he? Not what age is he. What age is he in your image of him over the last 3 minutes? Have you forgotten a little piece of information? My picture is, late teenager, early 20s, something like that. How old is this guy?
He's about
40. Well, I'll leave that as an exercise for the reader. I think he might be 70. I think we went through this a while back. My picture is just like yours. You know, he's 22, 23, strapping, Lift that bucket. Okay. He kissed Rachel and burst into tears. He told Rachel that he was his father's kinsman and Rebekah's son, and she ran to tell her father. As soon as he heard her speak of his sister's son Jacob, Laban ran to greet him, embraced him, kissed him. Lots of kissing going on. Took him into his house. Jacob told Laban everything that happened, and Laban said to him, and this is almost a quote from Adam speaking of Eve. What does he say? Bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. that old ancient echo from Adam, speaking of Jacob. After Jacob had been staying with him for a month, Laban said to Jacob, "Just because you're my kinsman, why should you work for me for nothing?" Eastern language, Oriental language, is fascinating at this point. The commentators spend pages and pages on this sentence. "Just because you're my kinsman, why should you work for me for nothing?" Here's the first thing they say. Do you notice the assumption in the sentence? I am looking, I hope, at verse 15. After Jacob had been staying with him for a month, Laban said to Jacob, "Just because you're my kinsman, why should you work for me for nothing? Tell me the wages you want." There's an assumption in here. Can you pick it up? You are going to work for me. Does that sound a little more grim, stated that way? You are not going to be living in the lap of luxury with people serving you. You are going to work. Now, let's discuss your wages. Now, you have to jump a ways, and because I do want to cover several chapters, and because this looks like we're going fairly slowly, I do want to say, if you jump forward, you find very interesting, both Jacob and his wives-to-be are going to say the same thing. But I can't find it right now. He says, "You have changed my wages 10 times. And that does not seem to be refuted by Laban. Laban says, "You work for me and I will give you some wages." And it seems like every time he promised him something, it really didn't come through. And part of the story of this 3 chapters is how some combination of God's intervention and Jacob's cleverness and trickery thwart Laban's plans. But he says, "You're not going to just sit around and be served by people. That month has gone by. That's enough. You're going to work. So let's talk about your wages." Do they talk about the wages? You bet. You bet. Heart of the story. What does Jacob want for his wages? He wants Rachel. He wants Rachel. And what you have just heard whispered from the second row, the younger daughter, turns out to be the part on which this story turns. There are plot twists in here, and there's a big one coming. Laban had 2 daughters, the elder named Leah. Very good, we're in verse 16, and the younger Rachel. Leah had, oh no, I know it says weak eyes, but there's a better translation.
No sparkle in her eyes.
Lovely eyes, this one says. Yes. Leah had lovely eyes. But Rachel was shapely and beautiful. Shapely and beautiful is a double bonus. There's something good here. Okay, beautiful would be enough. Shapely would be enough, but shapely and beautiful. That's something. Now, I don't know how to reconcile this. If you have different words going in different places, I don't know how to reconcile. I'm aware that they throw the words that way. This, I think, is close to what I've normally seen when I look across. This seems to be the preponderance. There was something about Leah's eyes. There was something about Rachel's body and face.
It's like when you go on a blind date and they say, "Oh, they have a great personality."
Have you seen the Seinfeld episode where George is getting set up for a blind date? Does her skin have a pinkish hue? And Jerry says, "A pinkish hue? It has a hue." Good lines. Yeah, it's almost like what you hear. Okay, so let's review. What wages do you want? The question is hanging in the air. And the writer is filling in information for you. Laban had 2 daughters. Leah was the elder, Rachel the younger. Leah had lovely eyes. Let's take that for the moment if you would like to do some investigation and replace that in your thinking. please be my guest. But Rachel was shapely and beautiful. There is a difference between the two, and the level, the preponderance seems to come out on the side of Rachel. And verse 18 begins, Jacob had fallen in love, my translation says. Had fallen in love with Rachel, or was in love with Rachel. So his answer was, I will work for you for 7 years in exchange for your daughter Rachel. Okay? Now very carefully, because I want some stuff in chapter 32 to make sense to you, what has just happened if Laban says yes? Giving is the wrong word. He is not giving. He is selling his daughter. And that's the verb that Rachel and Leah use at the end of 20 years. Because what happens is he's there 20 years, and when 20 years is up, he has visions from God that cause him to leave. And part of the picture is his wives saying, yes, we agree. Our father sold us. And the earnings that our father got from selling us, they belong to us. So it's okay to steal everything you can and run. And that's almost what he does at the end of this. He's running from Esau as he comes in. He's running from Laban as he goes back. And I want you to see the arc of the story. I want you to see the arc of the story. That's A-R-C, not A-R-K, for those of you who are keeping. Everybody okay? There is a transaction here. His daughter's hand in marriage is his earnings. He is earning her for his work. How much work? 7 years. A vigorous 24, 25-year-old in a 70-year-old body. That's the part that I still, my image remains in contrast. So Jacob worked 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him like just a few days, because he loved her so much. 7 years were up, and it looks like Laban need to be reminded. Laban seems to have forgotten about this. Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my time is up, and I should like to go to her. Oh my, what a sentence. Just those of you who know something of marital bliss, ponder that sentence. Give me my wife, for my time is up, and I should like to go to her. Interesting sentence. Laban gathered all the people of the place together, gave a banquet, but when night came, he took his daughter Leah and brought her to Jacob, and he slept with her. Laban gave his slave girl Zilpah to his daughter Leah as her slave. It was dark, she was veiled, and morning came, and there's Leah. What do you do now? I need Bill to just... I really like it when you guys sit in the front row, because it means I hear your whispers. Okay. Bill has it exactly right. He has expressed it perfectly. Go, Bill.
What goes around comes around.
The trickster has been tricked. The trickster has been tricked. And the start of the interaction between Laban and Jacob is before us. When morning came, mine simply says, it was Leah, exclamation point. Does yours say something like that? Yes. Behold, yes. I've gotten on a kick lately of thinking about words that start with B. I'm fascinated by these. I'm probably going to have to make a list so that I don't have to remember one twice. But besmirch, okay. Bewildered, okay. Behold. Yeah, bothered isn't that good. It's got to be... Yeah. Somebody last night tried to say be bothered, but that didn't work. When morning came, it was Leah, exclamation point. So Jacob said to Laban. Do you think the word said captures this? Do you think it was, hey, Laban, you got a minute? You finish your coffee first, that's okay. What have you done to me? Did I not work for you for Rachel? Why then have you tricked me? Right about there, I would think something in his conscience would have gone off. I doubt he would let you know it. But my picture is somewhere in his head, right about there. A little alarm bell went off. Huh. This is what it feels like to be on the other side. Laban replied, "It's not the custom in our place to marry off the younger before the elder. Don't you remember the water? We water our sheep in the middle of the day. We have different customs here." Sorry, you didn't know the customs, huh? "Finish this marriage week, and I'll give you the other one too." Oh my goodness, what would you feel like if you were Rachel and you heard those words? "I'll give you the other one too." Is that what yours says? "In return for your working for me 7 more years. So 2 wives in a week. He might have gotten another wedding week after. This is complicated, and as Travis put it so eloquently, we don't do it this way now. Somehow we have to take it that this was okay then, but okay is in quote marks, I think. "Finish this marriage week, and I will give you the other one too in return for your working with me another 7 years. Jacob agreed, and when he had finished the week, Laban gave him his daughter Rachel as his wife. Laban gave his slave girl Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her slave. So Jacob slept with Rachel too, and he loved Rachel more than Leah." Go back to Isaac with Esau and Jacob. Go back to Abraham with Ishmael and Isaac. What are you setting up here?
Rivalry.
You're setting up disaster. Okay? Jacob gets, I started to say lucky. Fortunate, I think, may be a better word. Because the disaster doesn't go as deep as it might. You've still got 2 chapters to read. But it turns out not as bad as you might think. And we're going to have to look at that before we finish this morning. Yes, sir.
Why would he not give Rachel to him then and tell him he had to work another 7 years for him, and then he would give him Rachel, because he would probably have been so outraged, and what might have happened, who knows, if he had not given Rachel to him then.
It almost looks like it did in the way this is written, the way the New American NIV is written.
Your translation seems to be at odds with what I have read.
Right. I mean, it does.
Why don't you read yours and let's hear?
I'll start back in 26. "Laban replied, 'It's not our custom here to give the younger daughter in marriage before the older one. Finish the daughter's bridal week, then we will give you the younger one also in return for another 7 years of work.' And Jacob did so. He finished the week with Leah, and then Laban gave him his daughter Rachel to be his wife. Laban gave his servant Bilhah to his daughter Rachel as her maidservant. Jacob lay with Rachel also, and he loved her, Rachel, more than Leah, and he worked for Laban another 7 years."
Okay, I hope we're saying the same thing. It sure sounds like it. He marries Leah. 1 week later, he marries Rachel. I thought that's what I was saying. Okay. Why didn't he wait 7 years and then? He's got a son-in-law who has a heritage that Laban probably knows about. He probably watched Rebekah go away years before. And he knew something of the wealth and power that was on Jacob's side of the family. I don't know that you want to upset your son-in-law that much. He's upset him already.
And you get another 7 years.
Yeah, you get another 7 years of work. I don't know the answer to that. Why didn't he do that? My suspicion is he didn't think he could get away with it. Because I think he's doing everything he thinks he can get away with. Okay.
The title of this section in my Bible says, "Laban's Treachery."
Good word. Verse 31.
I just want to know what Rachel was doing the night of the wedding.
I suspect she is somewhere protesting. Okay. Would you read verse 31 in chapter 29? When the Lord saw that Leah was, some translations read hated. Does yours read hated?
Not loved.
Not loved. Let's make sure we're hearing this right. Leah, when the Lord saw that Leah was hated, is some translations. My translation says unloved. I think there's some that say not loved.
Despised,
your sister. Okay. I am told by the commentators that the word that they are translated hated or despised is a word that means loved less than, and somehow got translated that way. I don't have an explanation for that other than the commentators. I don't read Hebrew, and I don't have the ability to do that. But my translation has a footnote that says we are using a softer word than what you may have seen in other translations, because we think that fits better. The word means the less favored wife in a polygamous household. There is a primary wife, there are secondary wives in polygamous households, and they're saying the primary wife was not necessarily the first one. It was the most loved. Leah was not in that position. But what did God do? He gave her children. What did he do with Rachel? And we're back to Abraham again. Leah conceived and gave birth to a son whom she named Reuben, meaning the Lord has seen my misery. By the time we get finished with this section, how many children will have been born? By the time we get through with this section, all the way to Genesis 32:22. I think the number is 11. Okay? And what you're going to hear with each one is you're going to hear their names and something of what the name means. Named him Reuben because the Lord has seen my misery. And she said, now my husband will love me. Conceiving again, she gave birth to a son and said, the Lord heard that I was unloved, and so he has given me this one too. And she named him Simeon. And you figure that that probably means something like, here comes another one, or some phrase like that. Okay? Again, she conceived and gave birth to a son. This time, my husband will become attached to me because I've borne him three sons. Accordingly, she named him Levi, and you have a sense of the meaning of that word. Again, she conceived and gave birth to a son and said, now I will praise the Lord. Do you notice a shift on her fourth? The first three have been focused on her relationship with her husband. The fourth one shifts to praising God. And his name is Judah. Keep an eye on that one. Was Judah the firstborn? No. Was he the secondborn? No. Was he the thirdborn? No. Fourthborn.
Yes.
Chapter 30. Rachel, seeing that she herself gave Jacob no children, became jealous of her sister and said to Jacob, give me children or I will die. This made Jacob angry with Rachel, and he retorted, am I in the position of God who has denied you motherhood? And so what did she do? Skim the next few verses. Next page out of Abraham's book. Here comes the maidservant. Remember those two maidservants that it mentioned back earlier were given? Okay. In essence, these become secondary wives for Jacob. By the time he gets through, he doesn't have two wives. He's got, in essence, two plus two. Not exactly four, because two have a different status from the other two. If you go and read about Solomon in your look through the Old Testament that you'll get later today if you haven't had it already, you'll pass Solomon and, you know, just about that fast. How many wives did he have? I think it was 300. And it says, wives of royal rank, and he had 900 concubines. I think the number total was something like 1,200. And there was a first rank and a second rank, and you're sort of getting ready for that years later. Okay, I think I've got the numbers right. Here is my slave girl Bilhah. Sleep with her and let her give birth on my knees. Through her then I too shall have children. And that's very much an echo of Ishmael. She gave her slave girl Bilhah as concubine. Jacob slept with her. Bilhah conceived. Rachel said, God has done me justice. He has heard my prayer and given me a son. Accordingly, she named him Dan. So again, as you go through, I don't know that I'm going to go a whole lot further with this. By the time you get finished, Rachel has had some children by this slave girl. Leah says, I don't like the way this is going. Take my slave girl, and here comes some more kids. So by the time you get through, there's 10 of them have been born. 4 to Leah, and then I think 2 to Rachel's, and maybe it's 2 and 4, maybe it's 3 and 3. But these are the 12 children of Jacob. The 12 tribes of Israel are coming from these. It's a complicated start. This is not a pretty start. This is not a simple start. And some of the complications that come later are probably coming out of this. There's this wonderful section where they decide that there is some kind of plant that derives the special power to conceive. And so they start fighting over the plant. One of them finds the plant and the other one wants it, and they make bargains with each other as to how they're going to do this. And I think Leah may have actually had another child this way. Mandrakes, they're called, and I don't understand all of that, except you start to get the hint somewhere in here that biology and genetics is playing a role somewhere. Now, let's skip forward just a little bit. Verse 22. There's a very poignant verb in this sentence. What's the verb? God remembered Rachel and opened her womb. She conceived and gave a son. He gave birth to a son, and she said, God has taken away my disgrace, and she named him Joseph, saying, may God add another son for me. Now, we're almost out of time, and that's probably a pretty good place to take a break. So your assignment is to read through the end of chapter 32, and the next time we're together, which will be about a month from now, we'll work on this. Let's just back up and take a quick look here. What goes around comes around. How did Jesus put it? Those who live by the sword will die by the sword. A variation on this theme. Here's Jacob having gotten where he is by tricking and conniving and scamming people. And here's a father-in-law who looks like he's close to a match. Turns out he's not quite, but he's pretty close. And it takes 20 years to work this out. Here's a whole bunch of children born in complicated times. What does this give rise to? Complicated interactions among the children. But Rachel has finally had a son. Without knowing the rest of the story, which many of you know well, but even without, pretend you set all that aside, what do you think is going to happen with that boy? Joseph. He's going to end up being favored. Turns out he's favored a whole lot more than anybody thought. And interestingly enough, this is the thought I'd like to leave you with. With Abraham, there was Ishmael and Isaac. With Isaac, there was Esau and Jacob. And in each case, God made a choice. Isaac, not Ishmael. Jacob, not Esau, right? You now have these 12 that are coming. Rachel will have one more. That's Benjamin. One more child. That's Benjamin. You now have these 12. You would think if the pattern kept going, God would choose one and reject all of the others. But what happens? He pulls them all. And it's like you've got three generations, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then suddenly past Jacob, it's let's just pull everybody in. And I want you to feel that shift as it's coming. Because what happens through Joseph has more power almost than what's happened with Isaac and with Jacob compared to the others. And yet, Joseph does not distinguish himself, separate himself, so that he's alone in God's favor without these. Somehow with Joseph, he pulls them all back in. And here's what I want you to hear. Joseph is the most Christ-like character in this part of the Bible. What happens to him is at least close enough to parallel what happened to Jesus. And in that process of what happened to Joseph, the aftermath was that everybody came back together. And he brought them together as their leader. That picture of the Christ-like character of Joseph was what I was talking about last week when I talked about God saying, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's why it jars so much, and I think deliberately so. So think back to what we talked about last week, and I think maybe now it'll make a little more sense why skipping Joseph and staying with Jacob, saying Jacob and not saying Israel, because his name is going to change before you get to chapter 32, or just after you get to chapter 33. That's enough for today. I hope you all have a good time for the next couple of weeks, and we'll see you soon. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, these are old words, old times, and yet somehow they come alive when we read your scripture closely. We thank you for the translators who have put new words to these old words to where we can understand them in our language. We thank you for translators who do that in other languages across the world. We thank you for illuminating our hearts with these stories. We understand these people that you loved and blessed weren't always nice and weren't always doing right things. But somehow you're taking what happens and you're guiding them and moving them to where they become not just blessed, but a blessing to everyone around them, even if they don't realize they're doing it. Because that's your plan for all of us who are your children. We pray all this in your Son's name. Amen. Yes.